All right. Well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Cross and the Crescent Discussion Group. This is a weekly Blog Talk radio show dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. We're here every week, 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. Only once a week now. We were doing it, and that was just way too much. You know, when you do it twice, you have, it's like when you're a teacher and you have to teach two separate classes. Well, you have to do two separate preps per day, meaning that you have to prepare two separate lessons. You have to prepare two separate assignments and all this. And it's just, so once a week is fine. And I see happy Psalms are Palm. You know, I said that this morning. Chloe is in the chat. She said, happy Palm Sunday. Yes, we had that this morning in church. When I was taking the prayer request for Sunday school class, I wrote down Psalm Sunday. I'm like, that doesn't sound right. Palm Sunday. It's triumphal entry of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ into Jerusalem about 2,000 years ago. Okay, so I'm glad to see everybody here. Today, what we're going to be talking about, and I think we've done this show, this topic before, when we've talked about credulity. Have we done this before where we've talked about some of the things that you have to believe as a Muslim or else, basically, is what it is. So what we're going to do is we're going to be discussing some of those things that you have to believe and profess to believe in order to maintain your Islamic faith. So we're going to jump right into this, if you don't mind. Let's see, present. And am I right when I do this? Nope, I'm not right. Present, share screen, bada bing, there's the screen, bada boom. All right, I think we're there. There we go. Okay. And I kind of like this this headline here. If we ever got a headline that says an army of squirrels overthrew the French government, would you guys believe that? Would anybody here even think of it? And I appreciate that, Paul, your sense of history there. It is the French after all. Yeah, it's not going to happen. But I mean, if you're thinking the French are the French, so it's possible. But no, it's not going to happen. And this is kind of what I'm driving at when we start looking at Islamic scripture, when we look at the Quran itself. And what is important about this is that it isn't that we believe these things. It's that these people that we are engaging in debates, defending, providing an apologetic of the Bible against their attacks, against their, and I would say, often say, their convoluted eisegetic type understanding of the Bible, they believe these strange kind of things. Now, they don't believe that France was taken over by some squirrels, but there's some stuff out there that we're going to go over today that they actually do believe. So let's jump into the next slide here. So when we look at credulity, and this is why I say this is the Islamic credulity. Now, what does credulity mean? Most people, this is kind of a word you throw out there. Most people don't know what it means, but this is just, it's a readiness or willingness to believe just about anything on slight or uncertain evidence. So what we're going to be looking at is the credulous signs of prophethood, Satan, man's, and these are just kind of, how do I say this? Because when you do this show, we want to keep things like light-hearted humor. Yeah, it deals with, well, what do you think that topic's going to deal with? It's going to deal with dogs. What do Muslims believe about dogs? Well, we're gonna take a look at that. We're going to look at, let's see here, urine. I know, hold fast, urine. The transformation of animals, their metamorphical abilities of animals, women, of course, that's always a big topic. Muta counselors, where's Dr. Kufar Phobia? You should have him up here providing guidance on that one. We'll talk a little bit on jihad and apostasy. how stones are rolled on their own, and they and some talking trees, even flatulence. We even have to have a topic about flatulence, believe it or not. And if you don't believe this, you're in trouble. Muhammad the enslaver, not the how do they view him, where he was the emancipator. Muhammad the, I've heard that go around, the Muhammad the, yeah. Muhammad and the anthropologist, knowing about human origins. Pedophilia is okay, as long as Muhammad is doing it anyway. Muhammad and ethnology, that and his genetics, Muhammad the geneticist, how he's able to tell us all about human genetics, and the astrologist. Oh, and the ethnic cleanser. Okay, so there's a lot of things that that go on in here, but what we want to do is we want to turn to the fact. I think my phone is going off like crazy here. I will say that the Iowa Hawkeye women are in the championship game this afternoon, and I was working on the show, and I have not had time to check and see how they're doing. If somebody could maybe do a Google on that and tell me how they're doing, tell me what quarter it is, I might appreciate that. Anyway, that's my wife. She's out. Anyway, she took my grand. Anyway, okay, never mind. She's watching the game from the Suburban. She got my generator out there. She got the TV. She got it all hooked up to Wi-Fi on her phone. I mean, she just she did one because my granddaughter had softball practice today. And anyway. Okay, so let's go ahead and bring this back here and take a look at what it says about Sharia law. Now, this is straight from Reliance of the Traveler, Division O, Section 8, Paragraph 1. And it tells us what apostasy is. And it says, leaving Islam is the ugliest form of unbelief. You have to be a kufar. It's kufar. It is... then I have to change my email address and my name. I don't want to do that, so I appreciate that. And the worst, it may come about, and then it gives a couple examples of that. Okay, so apostasy is the worst type of behavior you can engage in Islam. So you would want to know, therefore, what is apostasy or what is the punishment for apostasy? So you go down to the next paragraph in Reliance of the Traveler. And it says, when a person who has reached puberty and is saying voluntary apostatized from Islam, they deserve to be killed. And do we see this often? Yes, we see this often. So we can see that the enforcement of the apostasy clauses that we find in the Sharia are even practiced today. And we see that all over the world. So what is apostasy? And this is what I'm going to be talking about today. One of the things that is defined as apostasy, if you go to, I think this is the next page over, and it says, to deny any verse of the Quran or anything which by scholarly consensus belongs to it or add to a verse that does not belong to it is considered apostasy. What is the punishment for apostasy? The punishment for apostasy is death. They can be killed. So this is not a, you know, when we start joking around with some of the things that they're forced to believe because it's in the Quran and scholarly consensus says it belongs to it, it's really not that funny. But it is that funny when you start examining it in light of logic, the laws of logic. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, and I hear you guys on. Yeah, and I hear you guys engaging these people. You're on the struggle bus trying to deal with these people. What's the Black Pope or no? Who's the there is one that keeps coming on there, and I don't know why you guys continue to talk to that clown. I really, yeah, something like that. Yeah. He is. The guy is. He's obtuse is what he is. I mean, you can sit there and show him that, hey, look, you know, it doesn't mean this. And he goes, oh, yes, it does. How do you know that? Well, in the Quran. it's only defined in the Hadith. So how the heck do you know? Yeah, cool. That's right. This is the Black Truth. This guy, Black Truth guy. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Connie. The guy's a flipping fool. He really is. And you know, God bless you for trying to engage people like that. But I think you know a great thing to do is to engage people like that because it demonstrates how horrifically scarred they are by having to follow the Quran. I mean, this damages your brain. Danny calls it the plaque truth. The plaque truth. That's funny. Okay. All right. So, and here's why this is this is important. Because all Muslims are to follow God and to follow what God says is to imitate what Muhammad did in every way that they can. So let's take a look at, you know, how he prayed. And it deals with everything from how he prayed, how he ate, his grooming habits. And we're not going to talk about all of his grooming habits. His hygiene techniques. We're not going to talk about all his hygiene techniques. But in order for the faithful to do this, they have to follow these traditions that are attributed to them. Now, where do these traditions come from? They come from the Hadith. Aww. Is that the current score? Is that the final score? Oh, it's only the third quarter? Okay. All right. And I tell you what, they have a girl on that team. I do mean to diverge here. They have a girl on that team. I've seen like Steph Curry from the Nuggets shoot off the dribble. And I played basketball in high school. And that was one thing I was getting. You have to practice it. I mean, but the distance in which she is able to drain those shots off of the dribble is just, you know, because some people can set up and if they take a moment and they set up and they can shoot long distances and be very consistent. Shooting off the dribble is calculating on the fly how far, how much emphasis, you know, there's all kinds of things. And to watch that girl, Clark's her name. And I haven't watched a girl's basketball game all year. And I watched Friday night and the girl is just absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. Okay. Back to the show. Sorry. Got off this thing. Okay. So in order to be faithful to Islam, one first has to follow the traditions attributed to the Prophet. This is why the plaque tooth guy is lost. And I'm not going to say why I put that toilet paper up there. I'm not going to mention three stones. I'm not going to talk about looking pubic hairs off from your arm. I'm not going to talk about any of that stuff. But to follow the sunnah of Muhammad is a way to attain Jannah. Okay, well, I appreciate you doing that. Well, I guess there's a local rock quarry here that might help us out. You know, I was thinking this past week, because I'm really drilling down deep on this Mecca thing and the lack of evidence for it. And we look all around Mecca today and what all these building projects are going along. They essentially have destroyed whatever archaeological evidence would have existed by digging it up and hauling it off. And, you know, that's not how you do archaeology, of course. You don't go through there. Dominic talks about the sifting project. But I was thinking that the Zamzam well is still there. And this would be a artifact-rich environment. Because if the Zamzam well is as old as they claim, 2,000 years old, well, it's got to be 4,000 years old now, because this is supposedly where Hagar was cast out. And this is another thing to think about. You have Ishmael and Abraham building the Kaaba here, and then you have Hagar who had been cast out 30 feet over here at the Zamzam well. It makes
0 cents.
That's not her. Ah, she's just down. She's down the road about 20 feet and to the left. I have not. Okay. I may have seen it when he was talking about the sources for water in Mecca today, and they have all those water tanks up on. Right. Yeah. I get that. But that is, what's that? Right. Yeah. With the Red Sea there. Sure. Yeah. I've seen that one. And I guess they're like the largest tanks. Maybe there's a record of the largest tanks, even bigger than oil tanks where we hold oil. Or yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. Here's what I was thinking, though, based on producing an artifact. Because this is the thing with Mecca. There's no artifacts. There's no archaeological evidence supporting its existence prior to the 7th century. There's none. It's a black hole. There's no cartographical evidence, meaning there's no map evidence. And if this is supposed to be on a major trade route, it would have been on a map somewhere. There's nothing there. There's no manuscript. Nobody wrote about it. They cling to this Ptolemy thing from the second century where he says Makaraba, and we did a whole show on that, blew that completely out of the water. So when we think of trying to get some type of artifact or some type of archaeological evidence, all you have to do is go down to the Zamzam well. Surely there's people have broken pottery through the centuries, retrieving water out of there from somewhere. Go down there, find pottery shards that predate the 7th century. That would be, I would think that would be an easy fix. But they can't even do that. But we're the ones that have to deal with corruption of our Bible, right? No, it's absolutely silly. It really is. Okay. What is this? You were beat out by another dude for the Bud Light commercial. What was that for? Oh, yeah. Yeah, did you see that one trans guy did some type of Bud Light commercial thing this morning? It was in the news anyway. Doesn't matter. Yeah, let's just get away from that guy. All right. Okay, so Muhammad's celestial body. Now, when we think of a celestial body, we think of what? Planets, yes. Celestial forms that appear in our sky during the evening, during the day. And, of course, this first one deals with, you know it, that famous monotheistic, Sharia observant Muslim, Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great. And his piety that we all know about, because all of these stories that we hear of him are written by a bunch of Islamophobes and haters and bigots about his debauchery and his proclivities and his desires to worship the pantheon of gods from Greece. He was a pious Muslim, and he reached where the setting sun or the sun sets on the earth. Now, we know this is false. We know that, since this is in the Quran, and if it's in the Quran, then and the Quran is supposed to be from God, how can this possibly come from God if this is so wretchedly wrong? How can somebody ever believe this? Well, let's take a look at what Ibn Abbas wrote. Ibn Abbas was contemporaneous with Muhammad, and he said, till where he reached, commenting on this verse, where the sun sets, he found it setting in a muddy spring, a black and muddy, stinking spring. It also said that this means hot spring. Now, folks, contemporaneous with Muhammad, and he is saying that the sun sets in this muddy pool of water. This is one of the greatest scholars and of Islam, and his commentary on the Quran is held up as one of the greatest works and commentaries on the Quran that we have. But Ibn Abbas isn't alone. Al-Jalalain gets in on this. Al-Jalalain go ahead also opines. He says, until when he reached the setting of the sun, the place where the sun sets, the place where it sets, he found it setting in a muddy pool. It is setting in a, look at what he said, it's setting in a spring. But notice, in parentheses, they add to Al-Jalalain, described as seen. Because whenever you see these brackets, that indicates the translator is adding this in. And it says, from the perspective of the eye, for otherwise it was far larger in size than this world. Let's take a look at what Ibn Kathir says. So he says the furthest point that could be reached in the direction of the sun setting, west of the earth. As for the idea, now Ibn Kathir kind of straightens him out here, of reaching the place in the sky where the sun sets, this is something impossible. So even Kathir realizes that this is stupid. And he's writing what Ibn Kathir was, what, 1400s, 1200s, somewhere around there? Am I right on that? I can be. They found it right there on the moon. Haters? I don't know if they might have. I don't know if they think of that as a moon splitting. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So even Kathir thinks that. Now, so you have the scholar, you have Ibn Abbas, contemporaneous with Muhammad, thinking that this is true. But then you have Al-Jalalain trying to provide some degree of separation from it. And then Ibn Abbas is saying, look, this is impossible. We know this is impossible. But what did Muhammad think? Well, let's take a look. Narrated, Abu Dar, the prophet asked me at sunset, do you know where the sun goes at the time of sunset? I replied, Allah and his messenger know better. He said, it goes till it prostrates itself underneath the throne and takes the permission to rise again. And it's permitted then, a time will come, it will be about to prostrate itself when its prostration will not be accepted, and it will be asked permission to go on its course, and it will be permitted. So he's talking about the sun prostrating to God. But he also says something else. There will question thee concerning, I will recite to you mention of him. We established the land. We gave him away everything and followed. When he reached the setting place of the sun, he found it setting in a muddy pool. Okay, so they will question thee concerning Dhul Qarnain, which is Alexander the Great. Say, I will recite to you a mention of him. Yes. This is Allah speaking, when he reached the setting of the sun and found its setting. Okay, so, here's the hadith that I was looking for. I'm getting my phone blown up. Well, it must not be going well for Iowa. I don't know. So once I was with the prophet, a donkey on which there was a saddle or a piece of velvet, that was at sunset. He said to me, Abu Dar, do you know where the sun sets? I said, Allah and his messenger know better. He said, it sets in a spring of murky water. And then it goes around. Now, was that in that other one? He knows better. He said it goes. It was not in that. No, it doesn't say that. Yeah, this one. Let's see. This one is volume 4. I don't know which one I got that from. Here it is. Okay. Anyway, it sets in a spring of warm water. It sets in a spring of more warm water. So when we look at these, this is final review translated. Where is this coming from? Hadith edited. Abu Dawood. Yeah, okay. So this is a Sahih Hadith by Abu Dawood. So it sets in a spring of water. So Muhammad believed that it sat in a spring of water. Okay, now, how do we determine whether somebody is a prophet? How do we determine if somebody is... Well, that would be a good idea. Right. Yeah, they always make the opinion that if he. Well, you'd definitely be, if you followed the sunnah of Muhammad, you would find yourself in jail. If you tried to enslave people, if you tried to have, if you tried to rape people, if you beat your wife, if you married little children, engaged in sexual activity with them, you would definitely find yourself, and hopefully, and gladly, find yourself in jail. Say that again? By Islam, there, according to Islam, there's not supposed to be any more prophets. That's true. Because Muhammad's supposed to be the last prophet. In where? Did I miss something? I didn't understand what was going on there. Oh, Ephesians. Oh, that's not, no, okay, that's not, I'm talking about Islam believes that there's not such. Yeah, that's the road I don't really want to go down, right? Are there evidence for that? How in the world was Muhammad a prophet? Are there any evidences for that claim? No, there's not. But let's go and see what the Quran says and see what their literature teaches. Okay, so the sign of prophethood is, well, miracles. What are miracles done for? We were actually discussing that this morning in Sunday school class because we're going through the book of Acts and in chapter 3. In verses 1 through 10, you have John and Peter going to the temple to pray. And as they're going to the temple to pray, there's somebody that's lame there, and he says, I don't have any gold or silver to give you, but in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, rise and walk. So the guy rises and walks, and now they go into the temple, and they start preaching the gospel. So the purpose of a miracle is to confirm or affirm the message that is being taught by the person that is providing it, or that provides. Right, it attests to your authority. Okay, so when we look at Muhammad, did Muhammad do any miracles? No, but Paul, what does it say in the Quran that he was just a messenger, he was just a warner? And this is what's so crazy about this is because the Quran does not describe Muhammad doing any miracles at all. I know, I get it. He split the moon. No, if you read the passage carefully, it's Allah who's splitting the moon, not Muhammad. But that in of itself, I guess, would provide some type of credibility to Allah's or to Muhammad's message. Okay, I get that. However, don't you think somebody else would have saw it too? I mean, the moon's splitting, and you're looking up and say, whoa, look at that. And okay, so we need to quit making sense. Just believe, because if you don't believe, that's apostasy. You commit a prophecy. Well, this is the purpose of the show. This is why I'm saying it's just you have to, the credulity that one has to endure in order to believe some of these things is absolutely painful to look at. Okay, what else we got to know here? He's the father, is not the father of your men, but he is the apostle of God, the seal, there you go, the seal of the prophets, and God has full knowledge of all things. And when we look at this hadith It says, I stood behind him and saw the seal of the prophet between his shoulders. And it was like a Bir Allah Jalla. Yeah. The button of a small tent, the egg of a partridge. Okay. Okay, so he has the seal of prophecy, a mole of an unusual size on the prophet's back, which is simply, we have him in wearing a kufi. I mean, we have pictures of this, right? I mean, you've seen them on Facebook, I'm sure. No. After getting on the moon and seeing the evidence from himself, he's still this. It's not satisfactory for Neil Armstrong. I know, and I would, if I hadn't seen it on the internet, I wouldn't have not believed it myself, but I've seen this on the internet, and, Okay, so, again, here we're, of course, we're being very flippant about this, but this is the credulity that you have to engage in some of these evidences that are provided, and, you know, when you were trying to engage in serious dialogue with people, these are claims that you have to. You just cannot dismiss something that somebody has put credibility to. You have to address it, because if you don't address it, well, then they'll, you know, of course the common claim is, oh, he's running away. He's trying to avoid the topic. And we clearly can demonstrate that this is true. And you have to, that's unfortunate. It's like arguing with, you know, a fifth grader. And a lot of times that's what it feels like when you're doing this. And that's the thing, and that's exactly, and that's what I'm, this is, I'm going through this right now. Hold on, let me see if this guy has responded, but we're going back and forth on, you know, bring me a source, I mean, or bring me, cite me an artifact from, a pre-7th century Mecca. Show me a map, show me where somebody mentions this in the right location, and where how these people are wrong when they describe it as being uninhabitable. And then he starts accusing me of being crazy. You're crazy. You're going against all consensus science. I'm just asking you to confirm what they're writing then. Just show me a piece of shard of pottery. That's all they would have to dig out of the Zamzam well. A shard of pottery that predates the 7th century. A shard of pottery that is from maybe 2nd century BC. Well, I'm not sure. The well itself does produce a natural amount of water. It does. But the water is running out of from the hills down, because it's going down a plateau, off of a plateau, down towards the Red Sea. So you're going to have water running underground, a natural aquifer going through there. That this is true. And it does produce a lot. It does produce a lot of water. I think it's like a liter and a half a second. So there is a lot of water that does run through there. But here's the problem, though. The problem is that you have to, even if you have the water there, then you have to turn around and have agricultural land. You have to have land there that where you can grow food. Because if you can't grow food, you don't have anything to eat. And if you don't have anything to eat, you're going to starve. You don't have anything to eat, you're not going to have any towns there. You're not going to have any civilization there. And if you don't have civilization, you're not going to have any religion. And if you can't, and even if you did have, were able to get this amount of water out of the ground, you then have to show us how they've irrigated. You have to show proof of irrigation in the surrounding area from that water source. And there's nothing there. Yeah, something like that. No, it's second. It is. I get it. Something darter, something snail darter, something like that. Yeah, well, today they are, right. And actually, in 791, the wife of the Caliph built an aqueduct, and it took 10 years to build, and I think it was finally started to use in 801, and they had to start bringing water in for the pilgrimage. And that's why, because the Zamzam well did not provide enough water for the people who were making a pilgrimage that early in the phase. So, yeah. Yeah, I have it. I have it someplace. As a matter of fact, I have it. I have it right here. I don't sit there and act like I don't have this stuff. Let's see. Okay, I found that source. Here's the source right here. I think I have it on the screen. Okay, it says the Hijaz, which is the area in around Mecca and Medina, has been occupied for thousands of years, and numerous historical buildings and places confirm this fact. This is true, but it doesn't include Mecca. Among these historical places is Ayan Zubaydah, an important example of Islamic heritage and a masterpiece of engineering. The construction of the Qanat Aqueduct began in the 8th century and completed in exactly 801 AD to provide a permanent water supply for the pilgrims and residents of Mecca. It is named Ana Zubaydah, after the wife of the Caliph. It was who commissioned and paid for its construction. The project required 10 years to complete and was 38 kilometers in length. And it gets its water from the Wadi Numan. And it was to provide water to the people making pilgrimage. This is 170 years after Muhammad. So they did not have enough water at that time to provide enough water for people making the pilgrimage. So they had to build an aqueduct. And it remained in use until 1050. And there's some other things here, but I posted the link in chat just in case you want to click on it to check to see if this capper is just making up or if I'm not. How's the archaeology going in Mecca? And it is not. That's the problem. It's not going. There is no archaeology in Mecca. Dan Gibson went to an archaeological conference in Saudi Arabia, and this is where it kind of piqued the interest of people around him, because he asked him and said, okay, well, what type of archaeological evidence do we have for Mecca, and they said, well, they got something from the 12th century from an old Ottoman fort, the 13th century from an old Ottoman fort. That's it. Yeah, that's it. So when we think about nothing, and this is why I think this is, and I'm not one to lean on conspiracies that fast, even though I think they do happen, but not at the regularity that some people do. But anyway, I believe that the Saudis understood this and they knew this. And in order to maintain their position as host of the place of Mecca, of the Kaaba, and to maintain that control around of other Arab countries, they purposely dug it up and hauled it off. And this is why you find all of these high-rise, not office buildings, they're apartment buildings that surround the Kaaba. If you were truly interested in preserving, the ambiance or the religious
nature of that, you would have definitely built those high rises a ways away. There's no reason to build them that close to the Kaaba unless you're trying to get rid of the evidence. And by digging down to build the foundational, right, yeah, I've walked it. That is just, I mean, it's just, I tell you, it's just, okay. The trip to Israel is just so amazing when you are walking the same streets that our Lord and Savior, I mean, it's just, it just makes you, you know, with your mouth, you know, just, it's just amazing. It really is. If you ever have the opportunity to go there and do that, and this is exactly what I think you're alluding to here, Paul, is that we hold in esteem these historical places where Jesus Christ lived, worked, and interacted and did his miracles and ministries. Yeah. Right. Well, and they've also, what was it? This is what made big news. Boo hiss. Oh well. I mean, just making it to the chairman. I mean, this is Iowa. Iowa. We don't get to relish in too many things after anyway. But all right, let me get this off of my screen here. What is doing here? This is right there. Okay. So the sign of prophethood, that's what we were on, wasn't it? That was what we were on. Sign of prophethood. Okay. So the sign of prophethood, we have it. So that was the mole of an unusual size. Okay. So the sign of a prophet, of course, there it is right there. Prophesied in the Bible. This is what we would expect to find on a prophet. What was that? A mole in the middle of your back. And if you believe that, I'm sorry. I don't know what else. I don't know. Okay, now we're looking at the another proof other than a mole. Us dumbakins just can't understand. By getting a... so you become a prophet by getting a big skin cancer. Yeah. Okay. Second sign of prophethood here is the manner in which he received the revelations. Now, some people said he acted as a drunkard. Now, we find this in Ibn Hisham in the Sirah. And that's how it came to him, where he started acting like he was drunk, or he would start foaming at the mouth, snore, moan like a camel. Yeah, this is a sign of epilepsy. Exactly right. It says he heard buzzing of like a bee. So the messenger said, it would be like, okay. And he would start perspiring the size of, okay, so maybe this was it. Or he would hear ringing bells that caused. Okay, so we could call him the epileptic prophet. Yeah, false. We have to put that false up there. Now, so if you are, do we have any record of any biblical prophet that would, when he received a revelation from God, where he would feel physical pain? Foam at the mouth, foam like a camel. Okay, so nobody's heard like buzzing of a bee, perspiring, ringing of bells. Not ringing a bell with any of us. Okay. I know that. We're like a calf. Okay. Who is Satan and what does he do? All right, let's take a look at this one. Who is Satan and what does he do, according to Islam? Satan urinates in your ears. And that is if you don't get up for the early morning prayers. He'll urinate in your ears. And let's see, the prophet said yawning is from Satan. So if anyone of you yawns, you should check his yawning as much as possible. For if anyone of you during the acting of yawning, he should say, "Ha, Satan, will you laugh at him?" That makes no sense at all. Herrera, Satan has stayed in the upper part of his nose all night. So Satan is urinating in your ear, making you yawn, and then living in your nose. And here is that, let's see. Narrated, Allah's apostle said, when the Adhan is pronounced, Satan takes to his heels and passes wind with noise during his flight in order not to hear the Adhan. And that is one of the most, this is, golly, okay. Satan is not, okay. I'm trying to think of what that thing's called where you squirt, you put your nose back and you put distilled water in it and you, it's called, yeah, but it's called a Medi bottle. Does that sound kettle? Yeah. I've done that before. When you get like a nasal infection, you know, as much as I sneeze, I have all kinds of sinus problems. You would think I would do that more often, but I just can't stand that water because when you do that, it washes in the back of your throat. And you're like, I know, it's just, anyway. Oh, here it is. Okay, next topic. I've titled this Finding Love in All the Wrong Places, like elementary school for 100, Alex. Like on Jeopardy, yeah. Okay, so what do you think this one's going to be about? Oh, gee whiz. Let's see here. This is Quran 65:4. For those who have not menstruated. So there is a provision in the Quran. This is even if you have your Quran-only apologists trying to make excuses for what Muhammad did. Even in the Quran, you can get rid of the Sunnah. You can get rid of the Hadith. It's Bukhari, Muslim, Abu Dawud, Al-Nasi. All say that Aisha was 9 years old, narrated Aisha, meaning that she was there, oh, by the way, but even in, it's codified in the Quran, right here in 65:4, we're talking about the iddah, the waiting period for a woman after you divorce her. And so, and this is one of the sickest things that it says, and those who no longer expect menstruation among your women, if you endow their period is 3 months, and also, and those who have not yet menstruated, Quran 65:4. So what they're doing is they're saying that if they have not menstruated, you have to give them at least 3 months before you can release them from the marriage. And you can divorce them, but you have to keep them around for at least 3 months. Have not yet menstruated. They're prepubescent and you're having sex with them And on top of that, you are divorcing, traumatizing them by having sex with them, and then again traumatizing them by divorcing them. The Allah of the universe found it necessary to do this. So it's in Bukhari, how old she was when Aisha was 9. Again, it's in Bukhari. She had not yet reached the age of puberty, and this was according to Tabari, his commentary on this. And then we look at, who is this? This is, I think this is Muslim, to be honest with you. I was 9 years of age. Aisha, please be reported that when she was 9, and Muhammad died when she was 18. So when you look at the ages of when she was 9 and he died when she was 18, it all lines up consistently with history. And none of these numerical or mathematical gymnastics people go through at times trying to defend this to say that she was older. It says that she was 9 and Muhammad died when she was 18. He wasn't 18 when he married her. Where else is the same? Bukhari consummated his marriage when she was 9. Abu Dawood, Aisha says he had intercourse with me when I was 9. Ibn Abbas, when we start, okay, so here we're going to be looking at what the commentators on this passage have to say. Your most trusted scholars. What? Who is this? It just occurred to me that all these sinus problems that I'm having might be from Satan getting in my nose at night. Why didn't I think of it? Yeah. And now you're watching. I can barely hear to begin with. I can barely hear to begin with because I wear these, because I can barely hear to begin with. So you're urinating in my ear. That might be why I'm deaf too. Wow. Exactly. This and the fear of what? Well, fear of committing apostasy. If you commit apostasy, Okay. Let's see. Let's go back to this topic. I think I had several sites. Yeah. Okay. Let's go back. Let's see what the. Well, that's a great question. Aisha was there, wasn't she? Wasn't she? Okay, look at this one. This Aisha reported that Allah's apostle married her when she was 7 years old, and he was taken to his house bride when she was 9, and her dolls were with her, and when he died, she was 18. So Aisha is reporting that Muhammad died when she was 18. So she would most certainly know what her age was. If she knew how old she was when she was 18, she's going to know how old she was when she was 9 years old. Now, let's look at what Ibn Abbas says here. Ibn Abbas, who is contemporaneous with Muhammad, O Messenger of Allah, what about the waiting period of those who do not have menstruation because they're too young, along with those because of too young, their waiting period is 3 months. So we're not talking about, because when you engage with, you would be surprised some of the mental gymnastics you will be put through in order to see how people justify this. Because they will say, well, okay, she was a young woman. I mean, how old are women when they start menstruating? You know, I've known women that never menstruated, women that are 16 when they menstruate. So why does she have to be 9? Yeah. this is another excuse we hear, but women were different then, and it was a hot climate. No, well, the puberty is driven by a child's weight. And children today enter puberty much earlier than what they did 1,400 years ago, even 300 years ago, for several reasons. Number one, today, in the past couple hundred years, we've had a steady supply of a high-protein diet. We've been able to, and when you have a high-protein diet, you gain weight faster, you develop faster. The second thing is today, unfortunately, is a high sugar diet. And, you know, kids balloon up to gigantuous proportions because they're sitting there eating candy, sugar candy, all day long for all three sets of their meals. So to say that women develop faster back then is not only an excuse, but it's also anthropologically demonstrated that they haven't. People enter puberty later in life. Think of this. Catholicism. They used to have boys' choirs, and they had boys' choirs, you know, all the way back through the monastic. And if you listen to these boys' choirs, you cannot be in the boys' choirs and have a pubescent voice. You cannot, you know, how your voice changes as you get older. So they're able to sing in these, you know, these, soprano, alto, and all these high-pitched voices. Boys are able to do this. Why? Because they had developed. And they talk about the boy, when they start going through these logs in these monasteries, you have boys 16, 17, 18 years old, still have entered puberty, and their voice still hasn't changed. They're still in these choirs. So to say that they used to mature faster back then, it's not true. And we can demonstrate this just through manuscript evidence, instead of showing that, you know, these boys were in these choirs at much later ages as compared to today. So when we look at Ibn Abbas is agreeing here that those who have not entered or who have not entered puberty, they are too young. Why? They do not have menstruation. Why? Because they are too young. They're not old enough. So it has nothing to do with this idea that, you know, some women don't enter puberty or don't have puberty, they go in later. No, they're too young. What does Al-Jalalain say? And as those who have not menstruated because they are young. Not because they don't menstruate, it's because they're too young to menstruate. Ibn Kathir, same thing. For those the young, the same for the young who have not reached the years of menstruation. Their idda is 3 months. So you can go ahead and marry these girls. You can go ahead and engage in sex with these girls who are prepubescent. And then you can turn around and divorce them. And that is according to the God of the universe. Peace in the book that I'm going to be able to publish here in 9-10 short years. I give a lot of grief to, just to make sure that the reader will understand how absolutely demonic this practice is, to do this to a little girl and then to turn her out to turn her out from your home after you've done this to her. There is no God in the universe worthy of worship or adoration that would give ink to this and to allow people to actually think this, which is the scholarly consensus. When we think of the scholarly consensus says, not what some westernized imam tries to make it out to be, not what some apologist who tries to engage, well, how old is really old? And shut your mouth. Your Quran is absolutely explicit about what you can do to these little girls. And if you are not infuriated as a man And I'd say that you need to reevaluate what your position in life is. And this is exactly what happened in Rotterdam, England, where you had these grooming gangs. Was it 2,500 girls? And nobody said up to you? Gosh, just the idea of that happening to a child. We had a couple killings in Nashville this week. And they put the pictures of those girls on the TV. And to think what it's just hard thinking about it. But how demonically inspired you have to be in order to do something that to a little child is just... it's just unthinkable. And when you see the pictures and the grieving families of this, and where's Rad? Is Rad still here? Where's Rad? Rad is big on this. And we've gone back and forth on how demonically inspired these people are. You look at what they did at the Tennessee State House, the Kentucky State House. These people are crazy. And you can see, and I brought this up in church this morning. Not from the pulpit. I'm not a preacher. But in my Sunday school class, we were talking about, well, what would it actually look like? What would somebody who has been demonically indwelt or inspired sound like? And what would they be trying to push? If they would be trying to push this idea that it is our fault, our Christian beliefs that are keeping them from reaching their fulfillment, in engaging in these types of behaviors where they're mutilating themselves and saying, oh, look at me, I can decide whether or not I'm a man or a woman or I'm a guy or I'm a girl. I get to decide, not God. Well, that's playing God itself. And to see these people and the way that they protest, one of them was this guy. He was standing with the sign and saying that. Something about, and it was about the children, saying you're doing this to children. It was a protest against mutilating children or having children saying that they're transgender and then giving them these puberty blockers and then sending them through all these processes, procedures and such. And you have two transgender guys. These guys are getting right up in his face and they're shouting, screaming at him, F you, and they kept saying it. And then finally, it was in Canada. That's where it was. It was in Canada. And finally, one of them, that's a tranny, he hits this guy. This is what demonic possession looks like in 2023.
A lot like it,
yeah. Days of Noah. But... you can make that claim too, because in the days of Noah, no one was righteous. Nobody was, and everybody was sinning. So you could about imagine the type of debauchery that people were engaging in. All right. Nail head. Exactly. You hit the nail right on the head. That's exactly right. Okay. I'm sorry for the rant. It's just every time I deal with this, it just really bothers me. Okay, related. Oh yeah. Well, you're right. And every commercial, I mean, they got dudes kissing each other in these commercials now. I mean, it's just... Oh, the Disney Channel? Is that what you're saying? Okay. Didn't London have a Ramadan celebration or something like that this year? Were they decorated?
Right, yeah. Thanks, Paul. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Darcy. Go ahead. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I was in fourth or fifth grade when that came out, and I remember watching that, and I was just like, holy crap, they actually, you know, see, being in the North, you don't understand, you know, the impact of how, you know, how slavery impacted our country as much as you do in the South. It's much different. But one thing that I will note on that, to say that people had the Islamic religion, these slaves that were captured and sold to slave traders and brought over here were Muslims, is simply not true. I know to hear this is kind of a hard fact for some people, but it's simply not true. It was Muslims who were engaging in the slave trade. They were capturing other people who were non-Muslims because it is against the Sharia to enslave another Muslim, to enslave them, to make them become a slave when they're a free person. And so this, they would purposely go to war with other tribes for the purpose of not taking their land, not taking their food, not to capture them so they could sell them into slavery. That was the purpose of it. And they would not do that to non-Muslims. To say that these people were Muslims when they came, there might have been a couple that came over here. I mean, there's millions of them that were brought to the Americas. But also there was a millions of them that, more millions of them went to Arab countries, oh, by the way. To say that is just, it's just not true. And it's another one of those lies that are told that we're often left to refute with facts along the way. Yes, I saw that. Yeah. And he's just, make sure to understand, he's standing there not saying anything. He's answering, as a matter of fact, he's talking to a reporter, and the reporter and him are conversing back and forth. Right. Well, heard it up. Let's watch how some of these people act when you. Well, I would, if somebody would allow me to talk here, I would. Okay, here we go. Now this is, and forgive, I'm just going to let you know, they continuously drop the F-bomb here. So if you're offended by it, tune it down. Yeah, if All right, here we go. Now tell me if you can hear this or not. Can you hear that? Notice this sign says, children cannot consent. Now here comes the psychopath right here. Well, actually, there's one from here and one from over here. Where are we at? Where did I go? There we go. Now listen, it's like this is what a demonically inspired spirit sounds like. There you have what a demonically inspired. Okay. Okay, watch it.
Okay.
Here's the interviewing of the police officer. Okay, so now this is I'm wondering if that okay, he's walking up to her and he noticed he says, excuse me. Oh no. I figured it out. I figured it out. Hold on, guys. I got it. I got this. Hold on. I figured out that her training officer was a certain police officer that worked in Georgia that got fired for scuffing up some child. So he must have been her training officer. That's my most logical conclusion. Okay, Rad, this is the position from somebody that is supposed to be representing the press. And to say something, if you individually said that, okay, fine, I'm down with that struggle. But here you have somebody, and I think this is what Issa's complaint was, is that, okay, you have somebody that is supposed to be part of the press, and then they're saying something like that to a police officer. I agree with here, okay, I'm going to segue back into what today's show is about. Watch the genius in me on this. Okay. I don't have that. Okay. I don't have that part, but here's the segue. We are all incredulous at that police officer's response. Why? Because we were just shown a video clip of what happened to this guy. This guy wasn't saying anything to that demonically possessed guy that wants to be pretend a woman, and he was shouted at by all these people around him, and then he was assaulted by this guy, and then the police officer says, no, that's not what I saw. What I saw was your guy was shouting at them. He was provoking them to that type of anger. That is the credulity that I am talking about when we look at these verses in the Quran. And this is indignant knowing not only intuitively, but also knowing that it's written on our heart to see things like this, that we should become angry and stand up for it. Go ahead, Connie. Well, she doesn't have any credibility. Is what she doesn't have. Yeah, she has zero credibility. If you are indignant, I would be indignant. How dare you say that you saw something completely different than what we have right here on video? If you want to see this again, you want to see where they come up to him. He's not talking to them. He's not dealing with them. He's dealing with the reporter, and they approach him and start shouting all these profanities in his face, and then they assault him, and now you're telling me, no, he provoked that? This is credulity. How dare you? I mean, how dare you say that something like that to me, especially in this day and age? So here, let me show you something that Muhammad did in the Hadith, where you and I would say, well, wait, what the? How can you actually believe this guy was ever a prophet? Well, thank you for asking. Here we go. It says right here,
In a hadith, it says it is related that Anas, when Abdullah bin Salam heard of the arrival of the Messenger of Allah in Medina, he went to him and said, I will ask you three things about which only a prophet knows. And we've been through this all 100 times on this show. And that would be, what is the end of the world? What is the first thing you eat when you get to heaven? And why does the child look like their parents? And Muhammad says, well, when the first sign of the hour will be the people from the east to the west, and there will be fire, and then the first food we're going to eat is some type of fish liver, which is absolutely nasty and gross, but forget that fact. And then as for the child's resemblance, when the man has intercourse with the woman and his discharge is first, it will resemble him. If she has discharge first, then it will resemble her, he said, which is this Anas Abdul Ibn Salam. He said, I testify that you are a messenger of Allah.
Yes.
Okay, so this is the type of credulity that we are forced to endure when this... Okay, this is the type of credulity that we are forced to endure when dealing with Sahih Hadith. We're supposed to believe that. What? Say that one more time. Oh yeah, I mean, he's. I don't want to speak for God. I'm not gonna say that. But this is just absolutely ridiculous. In light of 21st century science. Now, if you're sitting in the 7th century, this might have sounded like maybe music to your ears. But if you have, and notice. Oh no, hold on. Let me go back here. Hold on, just a second. I want to show you something. The prophet knows, Father and the messengers of Allah said, Jibreel, look at it right here. It was right here. So he gets the message from his sock puppet. Jibreel has just informed me about them, about those questions. So here you have Muhammad turning around and getting this revelation from Jibreel just like that. Why? Because he wants to demonstrate that he's a prophet. And what does he say? Well, the end of the day, people are going to die by fire. Well, we can't prove that until the end of the earth. And when you get to heaven, you're going to have fish liver. Well, we can't prove that until you get to heaven. However, what we can prove is that you don't look like your mama and you don't look like your daddy because one of them had an orgasm first. That we know is most is true. So in order to say that, this is kind of like some weird Saturday Night Live skit. In response, we have to wait for science to advance. Yeah. It's right there in our intro that when we put that in the intro, when you, Anna, where he's marrying that 65-year-old scumbag marrying a 9-year-old little girl. You just want to grab that. I want to do. I would definitely do a little. Okay. Let's see here. What's this next one? Stay away from the animal shelter and photo studio. What could this possibly be about? Well, let's take a look. All right. Narrated Abu Talha. The prophet said, angels do not enter a house which has either a dog or a picture in it. Oh, Aisha reported that Gabriel made a promise about what? Then he cast a glance and by chance found a puppy under the cot and said, Aisha, when did this dog enter here? She said, by Allah, I don't know. And then commanded, and it was turned out. Then Gabriel came and Allah's messenger said to him, You promised me, I waited for you, but you did not come. Whereupon he said, it was the dog in your house. Who let the dogs out in your house, which prevented me, an angel of the Lord, to come? For we angels do not enter a house in which there is a dog or a picture. Why is that? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just bring my own dog in. See, come on in here. Just have a seat and have a, you're no longer demonic. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, they can. No, that might be why he had a deal with dogs. I mean, most people who have problems with dogs are people who have been traumatized by them, have negative encounters with them, that have been bit by them before. That may be true. Dogs is the thing where people just have this mistrust for dogs because there are some dogs that are not, let's face it, just they're not good dogs, and they will go over and they will bite people, and people become afraid of them. And well, that's but notice what the verse says, though. Notice what it says. It says a dog or a picture. So you have an inanimate object of somebody. And back then, they didn't have photography. So therefore, if they don't have photography, you have a painting of somebody, even if it's a poor painting or a poor sketch of somebody. I mean, that's just, yeah, that's just again, the credulity that we have to do in order to accept this is just absolutely, it's just nuts. All right, we're going to do one more, and I think let's not do that. What's this one? Oh, yeah, this is a fun one. Okay, you're going to like this because we had a sponsor for the show earlier that this is what it was driven by. Narrated Abu Kilaba. Anna said, some people of Ucal or Urena tribe came to Al-Madinah and its climate did not suit them. So the prophet ordered them to go to their herd of camels and to drink their milk and urine. Sahih Bukhari, so drink some urine. Here we go again. Malik reported that some people belonging to the tribe of Urena came to Allah's Messenger, may peace be upon him, and Medina, but they found the climate uncongenial. So Allah's Messenger, may peace be upon him, said to them, if you like so, you may go to the camels of Sadaka and drink their milk and urine. They did so and were right. Hold on. This is in the Sirah, the biography. And this is where it's explained a little bit more. The tradition was told me from whom, I'm going to go down here. That it came to the apostles suffering from an epidemic and enlarged spleens. And the apostles told them that if they went to the milch camels and drank their milk and their urine, they would recover. So off they went. Now, what happened to those guys that drank that milk and that urine? Do you guys know what happened? No. They did die. You would read further in what happened to these guys. They apostatized. They apostatized, and then they were killed for apostasy. If you follow me. Well, I mean, okay. And this is what people don't realize, is that they're probably thinking this. He told us to do what? Drink what? We ain't no prophet. God, let's kill this guy and get out of here. And they, they were incredulous, the incredulity that they had to go there. This guy ain't no prophet. This guy is a psychopath. They did. Okay. Didn't they torture him? Yeah. Yeah, they did something to their eyes. Didn't they gouge out their eyes? And I can't remember. It was just absolutely. Okay. This is what got, I'm not going into it, but when Danny Davis posted that one picture in Clubhouse never mind. But it was just this whole idea of people drinking raw camel urine today, straight from the hose. There's video of it. You get up on YouTube, you're going to be disgusted. You can go ahead and do that. But there's video of people actually doing this. And if you mock this practice, well, then that's some type of Islamophobia or some type of anti-Islamicism. No, it's just common sense. It's just, don't you be drinking urine out of an animal. It'll make you sick. It'll make you – anyway, the credulity that we're forced to suffer – because our Muslims themselves are forced to suffer because you have to believe this. And if you don't, then you're apostatizing, for Pete's sake. So I would hope that you're right on that. I would hope that you're right on that. But the problem is that they're tied. They're tied to believing this stuff. They're required to believe this thing. Right. It's part of the pill that women take, an ingredient in the pill, right? Yeah. This is this Dylan Mulvaney thing. This. Hold on.
What'd you find?
$5 at dressbooks.com.
Oh, no, this is it. Okay, here we go. All right. Okay, here we go.
Well, that's your opinion. What are you going to do about the assault?
Well, I'd like to investigate it, but in an unconstitutional way. Okay.
All right. Okay, let me back it up.
Well, that's your opinion. What are you going to do about the assault?
Well, I'd like to investigate it, but in a non-confrontational way. Okay, like. You're obviously looking just to be confrontational.
No, I'm not.
So actually. When you're ready to actually have a conversation and discuss your assault allegation, then we can get the officers over here that had already started that.
Okay.
We can do more about it.
I've already spoken to this officer. So what are we doing with the assault allegation right now?
Okay, I showed you on video.
Can I see it again?
This is funny. This is amazing.
Funny. Why do you think I showed her video of this man being assaulted.
Video.
You saw it three times.
No, I saw it once.
I rewound it and showed her.
Okay, let's show it again. I'll film you showing it here.
All right, let's show it.
Amazing. I'm going to need all your badge numbers before I go, please.
1932.
All All right, 1932.
1932. 1932. Okay, are you happy now?
Work on de-escalation.
1932.
Is that right?
Why are you?
Your badge number 3484-2907. Good stuff.
Nothing needs to
happen. Yeah, because you're escalating the situation here, sir.
Thank you for your opinion.
Now I'm documenting this.
You're conservative.
Only in Canada can this happen. Only in Canada. Okay. 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 Okay.
Okay. Stop it.
Your PD
department's
gonna be busy again.
And here's where it happens. For the third time. They're grabbing a stop that's assaulting him right there. Hitting him.
Hitting
this
me.
This guy grabbed some.
Okay, so what, Caucasian male, black jacket, trans flag?
Yeah, so we go find him?
Yeah, we'll take a look.
Let's go.
You need... What's your name, sir?
My name is Dan.
Dan, what? What's your last name?
So, are we going to go find this person now?
I just back up in like violence right now.
Oh my gosh.
So, let me get this straight. You doing your job.
Right
and
now,
signing a guy so that that person can go home and then nothing will come of it, correct?
I am right now keeping the peace.
So when are we going to go find this person who assaulted me?
And what would you like me to do with them?
Charge them with assault, arrest them, like a police officer is supposed to do. This is incredible. This is absolutely incredible. But instead, you're going to do nothing, and then they're going to go home, and then you're going to say, well, what am I supposed to do? This is such an embarrassment.
Okay, so that's the first step, getting your information regarding the assault investigation allegations.
I mean, this whole thing is a farce. That's why I'm laughing.
This is the guy wearing a red
dress. Obviously, it's a farce. You're doing nothing about violent criminals assaulting people. You're doing nothing about it, and you blame me, saying I'm just trying to cause.
Who blamed you?
And you did it. You did it when we already talked earlier. It's all on camera.
I blamed you.
Yes.
I said this is your fault. Wait, I'd like to see that. Could you roll that back, please?
You
just accused me of something. I blamed you.
You were telling me
show it to me now because that never actually happened.
I'm filming you right now.
Yeah. So you get it assaulted by a trans.
Well, I'm late for church too, so. Okay, I'm late for church. I'm late for church. I'm chocolate. All right, guys. God bless.